one, I think the week before that, we had some sickness in our family, so we weren't able to be here, but I trust that that went well, knowing who was speaking and knowing who he was speaking to, that I'm sure it was helpful and beneficial. You may recall in 1 Samuel 16, you don't have to turn there, but it's the story of when God tells Samuel that he's going to take the kingdom of Israel away from Saul. He tells him to go down to Bethlehem, and he's going to tell him the next king, he's going to tell him who to anoint as the next king of Israel. He tells him to go down to Bethlehem to meet a man named Jesse. So Samuel does that, and he goes down and he meets Jesse, and Jesse has seven of his sons there with him. And Samuel sees the first son, I think it was Eliab, and Eliab must have looked exactly like what you would want a king to look like. It doesn't say, but he's probably tall, broad-shouldered, you know, look like a king. Because Samuel thought, surely this is who God's going to want me to anoint. Surely this is the man. Do you remember what God told Samuel that day? He said, "For the Lord sees not as man sees. Man looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart." The Lord looks at our heart. You know, my wife certainly knows me pretty well. Other family members, friends that I have know me fairly well, but they can't know me near as well as God does, right? Because they can't see my heart. But God looks at our hearts. So the question I really want to ask ourselves today is, well, God looks at our heart. What's he expecting to see there? What kind of heart does God want us to have? Is there a type of heart that he's pleased with? And, you know, we could look at, I would say, multiple positive descriptions of the kinds of hearts we should have in the Scriptures. I think there are a few adjectives that are attached to the heart that we should try and emulate. But I think there's one that really, I think, just rises above the others. And that's the pure in heart. God wants us to have pure hearts. The verse on the screen here, of course, the words of Jesus, where he says, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God." If you remember the context here, you know, it's in the middle of the Beatitudes, which are there at the beginning of what we call the Sermon on the Mount, where Jesus is teaching everyone there really about, you know, the character, the nature of those who would be citizens in his kingdom. Okay, and he says, what's going to describe these people, what's going to describe their heart, is that they would be pure. Citizens of his kingdom would have pure hearts. They shall see God. And I want to come back to the see God part here, maybe in a couple minutes. In Psalm 24, just a portion of what was read earlier in the scripture reading, Psalm 24, beginning with verse 3, where it says, "Who shall ascend the hill of the Lord, and who shall stand in his holy place? He who has clean hands and a pure heart, who does not lift up his soul to what is false and does not swear deceitfully, he will receive blessing from the Lord and righteousness from the God of his salvation." You know, in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus said, he said some pretty radical things, you know, things that were pretty new to the audience. You know, you've heard it was said this, but I say to you this, taking some principles from the old law, taking them even further. But this idea of a pure heart, that really wasn't anything new. A pure heart is what God has always desired for his people and what he's always been pleased with. So let's think about what it means to be pure in heart. What does that mean? Well, I think we probably all have a pretty good idea of just what the word pure means, right? We think of any kind of pure substance, pure water or pure gold. What do you think about? Well, you think about it doesn't have any contaminants in it. You know, it's undefiled. It doesn't have any other defilements mixed in, right? Like that glass of pure water doesn't have any contaminants, or pure gold doesn't have any other substances in there. But I guess in a similar fashion, it doesn't have those things in it, so what does that mean? Well, it means it's 100% that substance, right? It's not just about what's not there, but what is there. You have a glass of pure water, it's 100% water. Pure gold, it's 100% gold. If you had a gold bar and you were to look at any part in that gold bar, you're going to find gold. You're not going to find anything else. Okay, well, what does that mean for our heart? Okay, what's thinking about what the word pure means, what does that mean for our heart? Well, I think when we think about pure hearts, we often think about, well, okay, it's a heart that's not defiled. You know, we think about, we keep unholiness out of it. We keep immorality out of it. And that's an appropriate way to think about it, right? That's right. But if you were to take, it's not an x-ray because that just looks at bones, but whatever medical technology could look at a heart, if you were to look at a pure heart, what would you actually find there? Not just what's not there, what would you actually see? What is the substance that makes up a pure heart? Well, that's really what I want to look at two passages here in just a second to really think about that. You know, a pure heart, yes, it doesn't need to have these defilements in there, but what are you actually looking at? What is it made up of? I want to look at two passages which I think will show us the main principle of what it means to have a pure heart. Let's start in Mark 12. In Mark 12, it'll be here on the screen. Probably a familiar passage to you. The words of Jesus in Mark 12 and verse 30, he says, "And you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength." I hope you notice the emphasis in this passage. It's the word that appears four times. You see it there? The word all. Give all of our heart and soul and mind and strength. And what is it that we're to give our whole heart to? Is it studying God's law with our whole heart? That's certainly important, and we need to diligently do that, but that's not what he says here. Is it loving our neighbor with our whole heart? Well, in the context of this passage, he talks about loving your neighbor as yourself, but that's not what he attaches the wholeheartedness to. He says to love the Lord with your whole heart. And you guys are probably familiar with, you know, that whole heart phrase, wholeheartedness, that appears, you know, multiple times throughout the scriptures. And almost every time it uses that phrase to do something with your whole heart, or wholeheartedly, it's almost always talking about our direct devotion to God. Something about our relationship to God. Loving the Lord with all your heart. Trusting the Lord with all your heart. Serving the Lord with all your heart. Seeking Him with all your heart. Praising Him with all your heart. If you leave the Lord, returning to Him with all your heart. Always, almost always about our devotion, our dedication, our relationship to God. We need to give our whole heart in devotion to God. So keep that in mind. Let's look over in James chapter 4. This one won't be on the screen. James chapter 4, I'm going to read beginning with verse 4. James chapter 4, beginning with verse 4, it says, "You adulterous people, do you not know that friendship with the world is enmity with God? Therefore, whoever wishes to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. Or do you suppose it is to no purpose that the Scripture says, 'He yearns jealously over the Spirit that He has made to dwell in us, but He gives more grace.' Therefore, it says, 'God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble.' Submit yourselves, therefore, to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw near to God, and He will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded." Purify your hearts. And who is it specifically in this passage that he says need to purify their hearts? Well, he says the double-minded, right? The double-minded, which you can probably tell by the word itself, kind of has the idea of like two minds. Or I think like two-spirited is kind of the idea there, which you can tell just from that definition, you're not going to really be able to focus on anything, are you, if you have two minds or two spirits. But you don't really have to look far to get a better idea of what it means to be double-minded. He uses that phrase or that term in the first chapter of James. If you remember where he talks about the double-minded man in James 1 is the man who is doubting, who's wavering in their faith, someone who is wavering in their relationship to God, in their devotion to God. That's a double-minded man. And it's that man that he says here in chapter 4 needs to purify his heart. Look also in the rest of the context of what we just read. Submit yourselves, therefore, to God. Draw near to God. You see the theme here? Then he says, friendship with the world is enmity with God. Okay, so love for the world is actually taking you away from God. He's imploring them to draw near. Submit yourselves to God. Be careful, because love of the world can actually take you away from that. You can't serve two masters. He says, draw near to God, purify your heart. All right, so let's try to sum these up, what we just read. And think about, what does it mean to have a pure heart? Well, this is my own wording. Probably could be worded better, but hopefully this is helpful. But a pure heart is a heart that is pure in its single-minded devotion to the Lord. Okay, so if you were to take that piece of medical technology, look in there, spiritually speaking, at a pure heart, what are you going to see? You're going to see a heart devoted to the Lord. That's the substance that should be there. Okay? A heart that's not defiled with friendship of the world, as he calls it in James there. A heart that's not, overly given to other passions, you know, whether that be hobbies or sports or politics or whatever, something that's taking our heart away from God. It's not defiled with those things. A heart that's not defiled with the love of money, as Jesus said in Matthew 6:24. But instead, it's a heart that's purely devoted to God. All of our heart, as we saw in Mark 12. You know, we mentioned earlier in Matthew when we saw Jesus's saw in Matthew 5, verse 8, where Jesus talked about the pure in heart shall see God. Now, I'll admit, I don't know everything about what that means, that they will see God. Perhaps it's just referring to the fact that they'll see God one day in heaven. But think about this. Thinking about, in the context of what we just read in James, specifically, about drawing near to God. Those are the ones that need to purify their hearts. Well, could it be that those who are pure in heart are the ones who have drawn the nearest to God and are the closest to Him? And in that sense, they see God. See Him as in know Him the best. I think it very well could be, right? Those are the ones who have the closest relationship with God and they see Him. Certainly, their destiny is they will see God in heaven. But think about those who have drawn near, or those who are pure in heart are those who have drawn the nearest to God. And that way they see Him. We could probably just stop the lesson here and reevaluate, ourselves and probably all decide that we need to rededicate and increase our devotion to the Lord. But remember, I said earlier that you have all these positive descriptions of what our heart should be, that pure is probably the one that's at the top. Well, one of the reasons I say that is because if you have this kind of heart we've been talking about, a heart that is pure in its devotion to God, aren't there going to be so many other characteristics that are going to come from that? If we have that kind of heart, there's going to be so many other things that could describe our heart in the way that the Scriptures would have us to be. And so really, in the rest of the lesson, that's what I want to look at. A few characteristics of our heart that come from having a heart like this. The first one we'll look at is a sincere heart. A pure heart is a sincere heart. A heart that has pure motives. Okay, so, you know, what it appears like my motives are what my motives actually are. If that made sense. It didn't make sense now that I say it in my head again. It looks like my motives are this. Well, that's really what they are. There's no deceitful or hidden motive. Do you think that we can serve the Lord with the wrong motivations? maybe that's not a good way to say it, because then you wouldn't truly be serving him. But let's put it like this. Can we do righteous things for the wrong reasons or with the wrong motivations? Well, we certainly can. Look at what Jesus said about the Pharisees in Matthew 23. They do all their deeds to be seen by others. Okay, they're doing these righteous deeds, but what's the motivation behind it? To be seen by others. He says, "For you clean the outside of the cup and the plate, but inside they're full of greed and self-indulgence." Everything looks great on the outside. It's nasty on the inside. It's a nasty place. "So you also outwardly appear righteous to others, but within you are full of hypocrisy and lawlessness." Their motives were certainly not sincere. And anytime we talk about the Pharisees, I think all of us in here are like, well, I would never be like one of the Pharisees. But wouldn't it be pretty easy for us to get wrapped up in this? Could I be standing up here doing what I'm doing right now with insincere motives? I certainly could. Anybody who leads in worship could certainly do that. What about any of us in here? Could we be any acts of service, anything we would do for the Lord, could we be tempted at times to do those things for the wrong reasons? Maybe to be seen by others, maybe to be a part of a friend group, or whatever our ulterior motivation may be, we certainly can get wrapped up into this. And it's really, you know, it's going to show itself in other aspects of our lives as well. One specific example is, what about at the workplace? Let's read this passage here in Ephesians 6. It's talking about slaves and masters, and we, I think, can make applications to the employer-employee relationship. Look what Paul says here in Ephesians 6. "Slaves, obey your earthly masters with fear and trembling, with a sincere heart, as you would Christ, not by the way of eye service as people-pleasers, but as servants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, rendering service with a good will as to the Lord and not to man." So for those who love the Lord and are devoted to the Lord and have sincere hearts, what's going to be your motivation at work? According to this passage, it's going to be that we are serving Christ. We're doing the will of the Lord. And so we're not some of these employees who give, you know, really insincere efforts, who are people pleasers, using the term here, who only, you know, work hard when the boss is around. That's not going to be a problem for us, because we have the kind of heart we talked about earlier. We're just working for the Lord, working for Christ. We're going to give a sincere effort at our workplace. Let's look at one more passage for this point. In 1 Thessalonians 2. 1 Thessalonians 2, beginning with verse 3, where Paul says here, "For our appeal does not spring from error or impurity or any attempt to deceive, but just as we have been approved by God to be entrusted with the gospel, so we speak, not to please man, but to please God who tests our hearts." The only point I want to make from this passage is there at the end. God testing our hearts. God can see our hearts. He's testing our hearts. It matters the reason why we do things. But if we have the kind of pure hearts that we talked about in the first part of the lesson, then we'll have hearts that are sincere. We have sincere motives in everything that we do. Let's move on to another characteristic or two that I'm going to actually combine here. A pure heart's also a humble and compassionate heart. And I would hope I don't have to say much to you guys about how God feels about pride. God, you know, hates a proud look. Actually, there in James 4 that we read earlier, it said, "God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble." So a pure heart is going to be a heart that's not defiled with our own pride and selfishness, and our own, you know, selfish ambitions, things like that. Do you remember what, I guess one of the bad descriptions of the type of heart we can have is one of a hard heart. You remember Pharaoh in Exodus? The kind of heart he had a hard heart. So how would you describe Pharaoh's behavior that came from his hard heart? Pride? Unwilling to listen? Sympathetic to what he was putting the Israelites through, only consumed with himself and his own interest and needs. I mean, it's really the complete opposite of the kind of heart we've been talking about this morning. A pure heart is not going to be consumed with self, because it's purely devoted to God. So there's no room for selfishness and pride in a heart like that. It's instead going to be a heart that is humble, that is quick to hear, slow to speak, it is willing to listen, puts others' interest above their own. And I think that humility, it's naturally going to lead to a heart of compassion, right? Over in James 1, there's a passage here that we're probably all familiar with, but it says, "Religion that is pure and undefiled before God the Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their affliction and to keep oneself unstained from the world." Pure and undefiled religion. That's kind of another way of saying pure devotion to God, right? This is pure religion. Pure dedication to God. He boils it down to these two things here. Now that second one is probably one that we think of often when it comes to purity, right? Keeping ourselves unstained from the world. I need to keep myself holy from the impurities that the world could influence me towards. But the first one is, it just seems kind of oddly specific when we read it, right? Keep yourself unstained from the world. Okay, I understand that. But visiting orphans and widows in their affliction just seems really specific. But why would that be a part of pure and undefiled religion? Well, think about it this way. Orphans and widows are almost certainly going to be people who are never going to be able to pay you back for the help that you offer to them, right? They're not going to be in a position to return the favor to you. And so it can't come from a place of insincere motives. I'm going to help them so they can help me later. It can really only come from a heart that is pure, a heart that is humble, a heart that is sincere, and only wants to help those who are in need. A pure heart, again, is a compassionate heart and a humble heart. Let's look at another characteristic. A pure heart's also a guarded heart. A guarded heart. What do I mean by that? Well, again, let's return to the words of Jesus in Luke 6. Luke 6, Jesus says, "For no good tree bears bad fruit, nor again does a bad tree bear good fruit. For each tree is known by its own fruit. For figs are not gathered from thorn bushes, nor are grapes picked from a bramble bush. The good person out of the good treasure of his heart produces good, and the evil person out of his evil treasure produces evil. For out of the abundance of the heart, his mouth speaks." Over in Matthew 15, he says, "But what comes out of the mouth proceeds from the heart, and this defiles a person. For out of the heart come evil thoughts, murder, adultery, sexual immorality, theft, false witness, and slander." What's Jesus saying here? Isn't he saying that what's in here is going to come out here? Hope that's not too simple, but I think that's what he's saying, that what comes in here is going to come out here. Okay? So if that's the case, what should we do? What should we do about that? Let's look at the wisdom of Solomon in Proverbs. Proverbs 4 and verse 23, where he says, "Keep your heart with all vigilance, for from it flow the springs of life." So that second part of that verse is similar to what we just read about what Jesus said, right? What's in our heart is going to come out. It's going to determine the course of our life. It's to flow the springs of life, okay? So what's the wisdom? If that's the case, then we need to keep our heart, right? We need to guard it, as some translations say. We need to protect it. If what comes here is going to come out, I need to guard and protect what comes in here, right? I really, I like the use of the word vigilance here, and I think this is the ESV. It uses the word vigilance, which kind of carries the idea of I'm aware there are dangers out there. I'm aware there are dangers, and I'm careful to watch for those dangers, to protect from those dangers. I think some translations use the word diligence there, I believe, which in English, you know, has a different meaning. But I like that word there as well, because it kind of carries the idea of there's persistent effort needed, right? So there's vigilance, there's diligence needed, persistent effort in being watchful for the dangers that could come in. And I wish we had, more time to think about some of the dangers. I probably don't have to spend that much time on that. I mean, we all know the things that can have negative influences on our heart. You know, the things we consume, the media we consume, the relationships we have, all of those things can have a negative impact on our heart. And so we have to guard it. Right now I have three small girls, and it's critical for Kelly and I as parents to take on that responsibility for them right now at a young age, that we guard their hearts. Now, the hope is one day that they take that on themselves and want to guard it. But how critical is that for us right now to guard their hearts? It's such a sad thing when you see the results of kids' hearts who have not been guarded, and what that looks like when they become older, when they become teenagers, and when they become adults. It's crucial that their hearts be guarded, and that all of our hearts be guarded, if we want to have the kind of pure heart that we talked about earlier. The last characteristic I'll mention here of a pure heart is a penitent heart. A pure heart is a penitent heart. You remember there was a man who, it was said, that he was a man after God's own heart. Talk about a heart we should really study, right? A man after God's own heart. That was said about David. I think in Acts it describes David as a man who had God's own, or man after God's own heart. And we get a pretty good glimpse, maybe the best glimpse into David's heart in Psalm 51. Psalm 51 was written by David sometime after his sin with Bathsheba. And in that psalm, he says, like in verse 17, "The sacrifices of God are a broken spirit, a broken and contrite heart, O God, you will not despise." Remember, this is a man after God's own heart. And he's saying a broken and contrite heart is the kind of heart that God wants. He says also in verse 10, "Create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew a right spirit within me." You know, those who are pure in heart are really those who realize when their heart is no longer pure, right? Go back to the pure water illustration. I mean, when you have a glass of nice, clean, pure water, it's easy to notice when something gets in there, right? When, you know, one of your children drops a piece of food in there. Easy to notice. But if I were to scoop up some pond water, it'd probably be pretty hard to notice when anything got in there, right? Think about our hearts. When our hearts are pure, we're going to notice when they're no longer pure, like David did. And we're going to look to God as the one who can cleanse it again for us. The pure in heart are certainly not people who never sin, never stumble, but because their goal is to have a pure heart, they seek to continually purify their hearts in devotion to God. They can recognize when their heart is no longer, or when their heart has been defiled, and they're contrite and come back to the Lord, seeking His help in making their heart clean again, just like David did. Is your heart right with God this morning? Maybe you've been pricked and realize that your heart is no longer pure, and you need to make things right with God again this morning. We can certainly help with that, but I would urge you to do so diligently. Or if there's one here this morning who has not yet become a Christian, we certainly would urge you to decide that today, to decide to follow Jesus and become a Christian this morning. If we can be of any assistance, please come forward as we stand and sing.